No, there's like the dark moment in the beginning of doing all this when you forget one time. And then on the side of the old Sports Center studio, they have the box of ones that they give to people who forget them. And you realize that, especially now post quarantine, it is just a cesspool of earwax and pain. So.
Welcome to Highly Questionable, guys. We're taking you behind the curtain there. That is Mike Golic Jr. warning you all and me to come. So let's make television.
They think this is so glamorous, but it's not.
Is trading Deshaun Watson for Christian McCaffrey and three first-round picks a big enough haul for the Texans?
All right, our guy David Newton at ESPN, he covers the Carolina Panthers, and he says that David Tepper, super billionaire, is down to do whatever it takes to get Deshaun Watson, and that is the example that Newton threw out there, is what he would be willing to do to get him. Now, that sounds like a whole lot. However, that Christian McCaffrey contract, how good an idea was it in the first place? Like, we really stop and think about that. Is that a move they should have made? Mina, do not pay running backs. Kimes obviously believes that it was not the way for them to go. But if you want Watson at 25 years old at quarterback, in the end, it is entirely possible that that would be the right thing for the Panthers to do. And it seems to me that it would be enough for the Texans to go ahead and make that move. However, three first-round picks for anybody. You are betting that Deshaun Watson can elevate literally any bum off the street that you bring in there to play. Can he do that? I don't know.
This makes a ton of sense from Carolina's perspective, not just because of the McCaffrey contract, but they should do whatever it takes to get Deshaun Watson. The real question here is, would Houston do it? And also, would Deshaun Watson do it? Because that's the sword hanging all over these hypothetical trades because of his no trade clause. Would Watson agree to this? First, Houston, yes, it is a haul. But if another team is willing to proffer a haul and a pick better than eight, say New York at two or Miami at three, that's Justin Fields, Zach Wilson territory. And if I'm Houston, I like that a lot better than pick number eight and Christian McCaffrey. Now we get to Deshaun. And this is where I start wondering if it's even possible, because if I'm Watson, I look at Carolina and think, okay, it's a young rising team. You got some playmakers, you traded McCaffrey, but that's a bottom 10 defense. And you just traded away all of your picks and there's not really a path to getting better. And why would I go there instead of Miami, where you've got a top tier defense and it's Miami? So to me, he would be the fly in the ointment that would stop this trade from actually happening.
Well, and Mina, I think that's the interesting part, because for me, it wouldn't come down to the discomfort of having to choose between Carolina or Miami if those are both hypothetical partners for Houston. It's if Miami never materializes into something and now it's, all right, am I Carolina or Houston? And that's the point where I feel like Deshaun is looking at this saying, man, is anywhere better than where I'm at now? Is this spot and everything that I've gone through here going to be enough to say, you know what, let's go to Carolina, in a very like sort of bachelor, bachelorette mentality, where it's, can I get engaged to you so that we can date and figure this out? Because that's what it would be with Carolina. It would be, can I be willing to go down there with Matt Rhule, hopefully with Joe Brady sticking around there long enough to see this offense get off the ground and try and make it work after the fact?
Yeah, I think the biggest thing, though, that this is going to point out, the Texans have all the leverage here. Like Watson, if the Texans make the decision to trade him, has the leverage in terms of where it is that he actually goes. They don't feel like trading him. And the sucker that used to give people those deals, like the DeAndre Hopkins trade and the Laremy Tunsil trade, that sucker is no longer present. I don't know if the Texans believe, and this is what it's going to come down to, is Deshaun Watson willing to go out like Carson Palmer, put a for sale sign in front of his house and say, I'm absolutely not going to play for you? If he's willing to do that, then yeah, he got the juice. We don't know yet if he's willing to do that. So somebody's probably going to have to bowl Houston over to do this.
So you really don't think he's willing to hold out? Because that's the messaging he's putting forward, but that's the only leverage he has. Like at this moment, Houston and Deshaun Watson are two cars headed towards the edge of the cliff. By all accounts, Houston's not even taking calls right now. They're so insistent on the fact that they are not going to trade Deshaun Watson, in disbelieving of the notion that he will exercise the only leverage he has, which is a holdout. I kind of think he's willing to do it. I realize that never happens in the NFL. but he's got the resources. He's already made like $40 million. He's got the rest of his career in front of him. He'd like to play for a good football team, and he's got the hate. Like, he really hates that team, and nobody blames him. Society is on his side, which never happens.
Yeah, if I want to go old school on this, there's a gentleman named Ralph Kiner. He used to play for the Pittsburgh Pirates, Hall of Fame outfielder. He wanted a raise, and the Pirates informed him, "We finished in last with you. We can finish in last without you."
Was LeBron throwing shade at KD by comparing Mina's beloved Nets to the Warriors?
Yeah, I just heard about this thing where apparently Mina is now a Brooklyn Nets super fan. I don't really have any idea how this happened, but we got LeBron James here, and he is talking about those Nets who they play tomorrow night, I believe.
Being a student of the game and looking at the collection of talent that the Brooklyn Nets have, is there a team that you can compare it to in league history, having that much offensive firepower on the same group?
Have we forgot about KD, Steph, and Klay already?
Now, I do think he's got a point here that we're talking about this as though we haven't seen anything ever like it before. And we did see something very recently that was similar, except that really only applies in the top two with the Warriors. Like, Curry and Durant are scorers of a different caliber than Klay Thompson. Irving, Durant, and Harden seem to all be on that top tier in the way that I would see it. So I don't even know if that's a fair comparison, but I don't even really think he's being passive aggressive about this or anything else. Like, when LeBron's being passive aggressive, it says to jump off the page to me. This seems to be more him trying to say as much as anything else. Like, no, we've kind of seen something like this before. Really, we have, I promise.
It also seems like the LeBron James PR machine, kind of life imitating art. You guys remember that comedian that put out the video of LeBron's reaction to the Harden trade to begin with? When it's like, I'm not Thanos. Why do they need three of y'all in here? The number three got mentioned an awful lot in here. Yeah, I like playing against the best players in the league, and they got three of them on one team. Did I mention they have three of them and we're not whole going into this matchup? This seems like a nice precursor to all of the sports talk overreaction by LeBron, reminding everybody we are not in our playoff form right now, and this team has three of those dudes on the squad right now.
Yeah, it's all about the numbers. I mean, LeBron was asked a question and he gave the correct answer, so I don't think we should read too much into that. But I do think the emphasis on the big three matters here, because looking back at that Warriors dynasty and their dominance, it really was about numbers. After LeBron played in Miami, he never had the numbers. It was always a big two or just him. And he's back to a big two. And I say that believing that when Anthony Davis is healthy, the Lakers are still better than my beloved Nets. I'll explain that in a second, by the way. But Anthony Davis isn't healthy. And that's the problem when you've only got two. It becomes that much more precarious, because if the Nets lose one of their big three in the playoffs, they've still got two. And LeBron is seeing that math right now. And he is looking at his team without Anthony Davis. And he recognizes correctly, he can't carry them against a big three. Nobody can. And that's got to be a little bit scary to him, especially when he's going against a team that's as lovable, as wonderful, a team that I hold so close to my heart since February 13th, 2021, when I decided to become ESPN's biggest Nets fan.
And to back up Mina's claims, I mean, they are undefeated since Mina Kimes hopped on the bandwagon here, so we may have to upgrade this to a big four.
Numbers don't lie. Hashtag Brooklyn together. Hashtag Nets Nation. Hashtag Harden did nothing wrong. Hashtag Kyrie's right about most things.
I mean, listen, Kyrie's right about fashion accessories. You guys see him coming into the arena last night? Man is living the dream.
Is
that's like a walking stick?
I just want to know where he got it from. Was he just waiting on this moment?
Yes, he's had that stick for years. Next to the sage and everything else, that stick has been waiting to make an appearance in a moment like this. And preparation met opportunity. And he realized and reminded people that a good walking stick is one of the toughest things to come by.
On behalf of Nets Nation, how dare you? He is injured. That stick is for medical purposes.
Up next on HQ.
This is always confusing to me because, honestly, I respect Bomani so much to the point where I'm often like a little bit afraid to disagree with you because you're so usually on the right side of history. Like, I'll watch videos we did together 2 years ago, and even if I disagree, I'm like, Bomani was right as usual. This is where I draw the line.
Do you question LeBron's shot selection now that AD is out?
Yeah, you're over there like, damn, y'all going to talk about LeBron again? We sure are, and you're going to watch. Now, let's take a look at this. LeBron been doing a lot more heat checking for playing the Timberwolves. Oh, wow.
Oh, there are four seconds left.
On that, you know, kind of, sort of. That's the kind of thing that you do when you're the guy with his name on the marquee. Like Kyle Kuzma, I would not recommend.
Probably wouldn't be a great look. I mean, we talk about the NBA postseason and the ring counting devaluing regular season games. No, no, no. Moments like that remind me just how little everyone cares about these regular season games.
I saw that on Twitter last night, and I thought it was a buzzer. Like, there were 0 seconds and not 4 seconds. And then my second reaction was, this would be a great GIF to use in those threads where, like, a woman posts something on Twitter. Just like something like an article or a fact or an observation. And inevitably some guy's like, you're beautiful. And then you always reply with like the Carlton Banks GIF. I feel like this LeBron shot could be like the new reply guy GIF or video. Or the, the Nick Young shoot your shot one. This could enter the pantheon of sad guys.
Or we could use this when somebody says GIF instead of GIF.
Oh, no, you're not one of those guys, are you, Bo? Oh, no.
The man who invented it said it's a GIF. Silence!
It's not Michael Jolick Jr. This is always confusing to me because, honestly, I respect Bomani so much to the point where I'm often, like, a little bit afraid to disagree with you because you're so usually on the right side of history. Like, I'll watch videos we did together 2 years ago, and even if I disagree, I'm like, Bomani was right as usual. This is where I draw the line. You are 100% wrong about this. You are wrong about it last year. You're wrong about it today. You're going to be wrong about it in 10 years. History will not look kindly on your GIF-ness.
The man who invented the GIF will look at me and say, thank you for listening to me, unlike arrogant Mina Kimes, who insists that her way has to be the way.
Do you question if Cam Newton will stick to his New Year's resolution?
All right, so we're going to go out to Cam Newton on his YouTube vlog. I don't know when he offered these New Year's resolutions, as if I am not mistaken, today is February 17th.
One of my hobbies, or what I would say one of my stress diffusers, is to shop. And one of my New Year's resolutions is to not buy high fashion. I want to be more of a thrift store shopper. I want to be more of a vintage shopper. I want to be more of
a person that finds
gems in stores that are less expensive and to still be able to give it its fine look, but I've said myself, and I've spent thousands of dollars, maybe even millions of dollars on clothes that I only wore once. So to be able to recycle the closet, like, so to speak, is something that's
kind of Bugs Bunny sweatsuit.
But at the same time, it's going
to
be
fun.
I shudder
to think about the price tag of that out.
Yeah, look, here's the thing. I imagine that he really wants to do this. I think he's going to try to do this. He doesn't want to spend all that money. He doesn't make as much as he used to. All of those things, right? I believe it. However, thrift stores ain't got big and tall sections, big fella. I don't know how many things you just gonna walk in on and get something that fits you.
That is so accurate. Because if you've ever seen Cam Newton in person, he is a literal Adonis. And, like, extra, extra large clothing does not fit him.
I will say this. When it comes to going to the thrift life and leaving behind what he did before, the thing that's going to get him is the emails. Because you know when you go and buy things from the place that the Cam does, they're still sending you those reminders of what they got coming out, what's dropping next. And as a current sneaker addict and someone who has tried to go a lower cost route at times, every once in a while you get that familiar vibrate giving you a 15-minute warning from a certain app. And then you walk right back to the same life you were always a part of, ready to give way too much money to a cause that doesn't really love you still. It's always going to get you crawling back.
But I always struggle with the Cam Newton fashion thing. Because on one hand, who are we? Like, you are wearing a sweatshirt on television. You are wearing a t-shirt. We are not qualified to criticize his fashion. He looks great.
The hell I'm not. Are you kidding me? Look. I'm not saying that I'm a better dresser than him or a worse dresser than him. But you can't say he don't be out here looking crazy. When he was out here looking like Mr. Peanut, you go tell me I can't say nothing about that because I'm wearing a sweatshirt in my own house? No, you are not. I repeat, not taking away our right to be like, what the hell are you wearing? You know what I'm wearing. It's a sweatshirt.
Honestly, I didn't even have this on my desk thinking about it because I've been cleaning out the clutter and I don't remember who got it to me after a trip to Russia, but it looks like his outfits. Can we please, like, tell me I'm wrong.
Do you question if Adam Sandler should always swing like this?
All right, the last time I saw Adam Sandler, he was in a movie with a woman who, even though he's rich, wouldn't date him in real life, and he wound up. But what is he doing now?
Okay.
Spoiler alert.
5 years since I've done this.
I didn't say which movie.
I'm scared. Shooter McGavin.
Be scared too. This is an invitation for the back to go screaming.
Look at that polo.
Oh, he's still Happy Gilmore.
Smashed. And that went pretty well. You dead, Shooter.
Yo, what I respect about this is, even at this point in his life, Adam Sandler is going to golf courses where he can wear that ensemble. And I almost called him Adam Silver. And I am not sure there are two people more dissimilar in this world than Adam Silver and Adam Sandler. That's like mixing up Somalian and Samoan.
I saw Adam Sandler last year, or 2 years ago, got COVID, at a Clippers game from when he was promoting the movie that you just spoiled that I will not currently name. And he dresses like that all the time. Like, you know, earlier we were talking about how Cam Newton can't shop at a thrift store because the extra, extra large stuff won't fit him. That's what Adam Sandler just wears. Like, he doesn't care. He is going to fully wear, like, the tall T, extra, extra large cargo pants in public. The dude is rich as hell. And he does not dress like it.
Which I respect immensely. And I want to believe that this hallmark of my childhood is doing this honestly. But in the year 2021, I have to always assume that I'm on the verge of getting got. And this feels like him and Shooter being back out in the media as the tremor before all of a sudden we hear the news that Netflix is greenlighting Happy Gil even more, where we watch them battle on the senior tour. And I don't know if I'm ready for that.
Should we play the Shooter McGavin response, by the way?
Nice drive, Gilmore. 25 years, huh? Let's see if it's Shooter's tour. Check it out. Oh, yeah. It's all about the short game. Drive for show, putt for the dough. Money. Shooter, still got it.
Yo, I love that whole class of actors in Hollywood where we know their characters' names, but we don't know their name. I went to four different places when I lived in LA where the dude who played George Washington Duke in Rocky V showed up. I still don't know his name to this day.
So, Bomani, where do we stand on Happy Gilmore? Like, in terms of, because there's a lot of people who this clip resurfaced, and I would say, of a certain complexion and age, that it evinced a lot of memory.
It's a two America situation.
Yeah, okay. I didn't want to say it. I wanted you to say it. I was just curious.
Yeah, no. It's a two America situation. And once I gave a damn about golf, I hadn't gotten around to watching Happy Gilmore. So maybe I should go check it out.
Wait, you've never seen it?
Nah.
Tonight on ESPN2, the Australian Open women's semifinal, Serena Williams versus Naomi Osaka.
All right, first of all, yes, hell yes, I am intrigued, and I am going to love the first set. I'm going to be crossing my fingers about staying away for that second and third. But here we have Serena in her last match against a person whose name doesn't really matter because, wait, there we go, Sabalenka. Glad they put that on the screen. Oh, I watched this live.
No.
Oh.
Yup.
Serena. Not at
back in charge.
Boom.
She seems to be a little bit heated, like she knew she was going to lose. Mina, are you intrigued?
I am. And this is, of course, the rematch of the famous Williams-Osaka U.S. Open final, where Serena Williams drew so much ire for doing whatever that lady, whose name I also don't remember, just did, because she's always treated with that double standard. But this is just great tennis, man. What Serena Williams is doing right now, it is peak television, and I will actually be watching, which I don't always watch the Australian Open.
I am very intrigued on this, and I'm even more intrigued that Naomi Osaka is someone we generally all love and everyone supports and wants to see do well. And in this instance, I have to imagine that she is almost going to be universally rooted against in this spot because we are all looking to try and watch Serena touch this bit of history that we have not yet gotten to see.
Sorry, I'll be here. I am Team Osaka. I don't know the last time an athlete came out that I liked more than her. Like, I am all the way down with her. I even read that cute little article about her and her boyfriend. I'm rooting for them, too.
That was really cute.
It was.
All right, that is the show. Check out the Mina Kimes Show featuring Lenny. Her dog. It's a podcast. Also, Golic and Shanae, or is it Shanae and Golic? You got to go second, don't you?
Yeah, no, I'm the passenger on that one here, Shanae and Golic Jr.
Yep, know your role.